This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I thank you very, very much for the questions you send me, and please do email me your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I've got a question here from Claudia. Hi, Claudia. She writes, "Dear Layla, I was looking for ideas on the internet on how Koreans eat their kimchi. I noticed they made some delicious-looking recipes with the kimchi, but they were cooked or they were baked. However, wouldn't that kill the good bacteria? I don't want to kill the good bacteria. Is that what's happening here? Do you have any recommendations on how to eat my kimchi while keeping the bacteria alive?" Thank you very much for your question, Claudia. I love kimchi. I basically started eating it a few years ago when I first tasted it. And of course, any new thing that you taste and you decide that you love, it becomes a staple. There's always a jar of kimchi in my refrigerator, whether I get the Korean kimchi or I buy mother-in-law's Napa cabbage kimchi, which is a little bit milder, doesn't have all the spiciness, because sometimes I don't always like the spicy. But I love the tang. It's the tang of kimchi that I really, really love. So, because it is, quote, a probiotic food, you don't want to freeze it. Did you know freezing can kill the good beneficial probiotic bacteria as well, or will at least, you know, slow it down? But cooking with kimchi can also, because heat can destroy some of the beneficial probiotics, just like if you're using something like miso and the soup is boiling, that's not necessarily the time to add miso to the soup, because heat can affect whether the beneficial bacteria will live or die, how they will fare. I love a lot of kimchi recipes. I love what they do with the, you know, the Korean noodles and the soups and the stews and the rice dishes. You know, besides topping a burger with it or something like that. But traditionally, I believe in Korean cuisine, anytime I've eaten in a Korean restaurant, the kimchi was served on the side and used as a condiment to add to the hot food. I think when you add it to the hot food that way, because you're not still cooking, simmering, boiling, that the beneficial bacteria will tend to live or will tend to thrive. However, just to make sure, what I always do is have kimchi as a little appetizer, as a little side dish. It will always be sitting on the corner of my plate, and just eat it that way. So go ahead and cook, bake, you know, make stews, make soups, have noodle dishes, whatever it is that you like. Cook your kimchi, that's fine. But what I would always do is always incorporate some raw kimchi, you know, on the other days when you're not cooking it, to get the beneficial probiotic bacteria. And of course, the addition of taking a good quality probiotic supplement is always a good idea. The addition of prebiotic supplements or prebiotic foods like leeks, garlic, onion, Jerusalem artichoke, asparagus. These are prebiotic foods. All of this is helpful in keeping our GI tracts inoculated with the proper beneficial bacteria. So, Claudia, I thank you very, very much for your question. Enjoy your kimchi cooked and enjoy it raw. I think that's the best way to go. Now, I want to bring up another topic here. I was reading recently in the news that obesity is now more common than underweight worldwide. Get this. Global obesity numbers have shot up from 105 million people in 1975 to 641 million people in 2014. Let me repeat. Global obesity numbers have shot up from 105 million people in 1975 to 641 million people in 2014. And this is according to the most comprehensive body mass index trend analysis to date. This is according to Medscape. I found this to be a really interesting article. So what the researchers have estimated that men who were obese climbed from 3.2% to 10.8%. And in that time, the rate among women more than doubled, going from 6.4% to 14.9%. Must be our pesky hormones. We don't have all that testosterone or lean body mass. I don't know. But during the same 40-year period, the proportion of men who were underweight globally fell from 13.8% to 8.8%, and among women it declined from 14.6% to 9.7%. So now obesity is more common than underweight. The data that was analyzed came from 186 countries. This was in the April issue of The Lancet, a very preeminent medical journal. And from over the past 40 years, basically, we've changed from a world in which underweight prevalence was more than double that of obesity to one in which more people are obese than underweight, says the senior author, Dr. Izadi, from the School of Public Health in London. And if these trends continue, not only will we not meet the World Health Organization's target of halting the prevalence of obesity and keeping it at 2010 levels by 2025, but more women will be severely obese than underweight by 2025. So, this is the first analysis of its kind that includes the rates of the severely obese, morbidly obese, and almost half of the world's underweight population are men, 46.2%, and women at 41.6%. This is the underweight world population. Almost half of them live in India. Okay, so this is actually a very interesting statistic. And researchers are pointing out that in rich countries, the poor are more likely to be obese than those who are better off. But in many other countries, it's really the other way around, especially South Asia, Central and East Africa. The poor remain thin to an extent that compromises health, economic productivity, and can affect future generations. The countries did vary widely, but they found that the highest BMI, average BMI in the world, were in Polynesia and Micronesia, that more than 38% of men and over half of women are obese there. Now, the study also finds that almost 20% of the world's obese adults, that's 118 million people, live in six high-income countries. Let me name them. Australia, Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States. And that more than a quarter, about 50 million, of the world's severely obese people also live in these countries. And more than one in four severely obese men and 18.3 of severely obese women live in the United States. Now, Dr. Izadi said that current efforts to reduce BMI are not working, and that bariatric surgery, quote, might be the most effective intervention for weight loss and disease prevention and remission. However, he says the long-term effects of the surgery are not well established, and it's not a realistic solution for those in low and middle-income countries. Now, when I look at surveys in our country, there was a survey done, a study done, that looked at the how many doctors in America, primary care, endocrinologists, OBGYNs, who prescribe weight loss medication, and how many are actually referring for bariatric surgery. About 13% of U.S. patients are being referred for bariatric surgery. Now, bariatric surgery, you know, gastric bypass, lap band surgery, gastric sleeve, all of these. When I'm talking about bariatric surgery, that's really what I'm referring to here. These are surgical methods for weight loss. And I want to talk to you about the eight most common gastric bypass side effects. So everybody's thinking, okay, great, well, I can have the surgery, I can finally lose the weight because nothing else is working for me. And I want to mention, in the survey of doctors who were prescribing medication or who were referring for bypass, they did so with the patients who were morbidly obese, severely obese, you know, BMIs over 30, over 35 BMI, who literally had trouble with stopping eating. These are the patients who don't stop eating until all the food is gone. These are the patients who, and I'm quoting from one of these studies, I don't feel right leaving food left on the table, let alone the plate on the table. So bariatric surgery or gastric bypass, lap bands, gastric sleeve, all of these are like a last resort for many of these people. But let me talk to you about the eight most common side effects. After gastric bypass surgery, you know, your stomach is basically bypassed. It's only the upper portion, a very small portion of the stomach that's left, and it's the rest of the stomach has been basically cut off. And that small portion of the stomach that's left intact has then been connected to the small intestine. So you have a shrunken stomach, so to speak. And these are the things that can happen. A lot of gastric bypass patients, they experience dumping syndrome. First of all, let me talk about the most chronic, the most common post-gastric bypass side effect, and it's nausea and vomiting. It's one of the most common side effects and is experienced in up to 70% of patients. And in one study, patients on average reported feeling nauseous 2.5 times per week and reported vomiting almost 0.2 times per week on average after gastric bypass. And then they note here that following your doctor's bariatric diet recommendation exactly will typically fix or improve the problem. Hey, you want to know what that recommendation is? It's choose protein first. Fluids, fluids, fluids. Avoid refined carbohydrates. Avoid starchy carbohydrates. Hey, how about if we just start doing that kind of diet in the beginning rather than having to resort to a surgery where now all you're left with is trouble if you consume more than a couple of tablespoons of food in a sitting? Let me talk about the other side effects. Dumping syndrome. What is dumping syndrome? It includes feeling weakness, dizziness, flushing, warmth, nausea, palpitations, and this happens immediately or shortly after eating, and it's produced by abnormally rapid emptying of the stomach. Okay? Other things that can happen, dehydration and abnormal depletion of body fluids. So you need to drink a lot more water after gastric bypass, as much as 2 liters a day. Dental problems can occur because when you've got a shrunken stomach and you're limited to only so many calories a day, like 500, things are going to happen. You will have vitamin deficiencies, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. So dental problems can happen due to malabsorption, not taking the right vitamins in the right amounts, potential changes in pH, in saliva after surgery, not addressing reflux or vomiting issues. Again, 70% of patients after surgery experience vomiting, nausea, and that will erode enamel, so dental problems can happen. Difficulty swallowing, and this could be caused by eating too quickly or too much, and that can happen to anybody, but in gastric bypass, even more so. And of course, when you're on such a low-calorie diet, like 500 calories a day following gastric bypass, very, very rapid weight loss can cause gallstones. Okay? That's a side effect. When we're only consuming such low calories every day and we have the accompanying nutrient deficiencies, hair loss will occur. I have firsthand noted many patients who have not just thinning of the hair, but patches of hair coming out. And it takes 3 to 6 months. You have to supplement your diet properly. And the things that are missing most, okay, are B vitamins, magnesium, zinc, iron. Iron is a big one. Indigestion will happen. It's the inability to digest food because, some of your stomach has been taken away. An interesting trend after gastric bypass surgery, there seems to be an increased risk of alcohol abuse among some gastric bypass patients, which is very interesting. It's almost as if the binging on alcohol has replaced the binge eating because binge eating is no longer possible after bariatric surgery because you will only throw up. That's what changes. I know firsthand from patients who develop chronic fatigue type symptoms due to very low iron, even though they're taking iron supplements. There was a study done, and this is out of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Let me read you the title. Nutritional Deficiencies After Roux-en-Y Gastric Bypass for Morbid Obesity Often Cannot Be Prevented by Standard Multivitamin Supplementation. So what they found is 3 months after the bypass surgery, 34% of patients required at least one specific supplement in addition to a multivitamin preparation that's typically given after gastric bypass. And get this, at 6 months and 24 months, this proportion increased to 59% and 98% respectively. So 2 years after gastric bypass, specific supplements had to be prescribed for each patient, including vitamins such as B12, iron, calcium, vitamin D, and folic acid. So these nutritional deficiencies that are occurring. Yes, gastric bypass can be successful. I hardly would ever recommend it. I would try the diet that's recommended after gastric bypass, which is higher in protein, lower in carbohydrates, elimination of sugars and processed foods to avoid dumping syndrome. Like I said, how about we follow that diet? And you know what? You don't have to go down to 500 calories a day where now you're going to risk becoming malnourished. Okay? Bariatric patients, they're at increased risk for developing a B12 deficiency because their GI tracts have been altered in such a way as to interfere with natural absorption of this vitamin, okay? Intrinsic factor is released by the parietal cells of the stomach. We need intrinsic factor to bind with B12. Otherwise, we're not going to absorb it. So because that part of the stomach has been bypassed, this is a problem. Folate and zinc are also low. Iron is low. Okay? Copper is another nutrient that is low. So including the recommended daily allowance guidelines, really, with post-surgical bariatric patients, and especially those who have had gastric bypass surgery, all of these micronutrients need to be checked for, because deficiency is normal, and deficiency can last a lifetime. I could tell you of several cases of my own of patients who have had gastric bypass long before coming to see me, who have chronic iron deficiency. I'm talking about people who've had gastric bypass, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So I would avoid too many side effects to gastric bypass. Do the diet instead, and you won't have so many terrible side effects. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.